When I think of how much flying has changed since September 11th, I think of Walter Kern. In June, over the course of a couple of airline trips, I read his novel Up in the Air, a satire of airline travel. The main character is a business traveler who virtually lives in airports and planes and is close to reaching his goal of logging 1 million frequent flyer miles. Walter Kern recently moved from New York to Livingston, Montana. We called him there. I really like your novel so much, and now it seems as if you're almost an anthropologist who published a study of a now-disappeared culture, a culture that's finished. Do you feel that way about it?
Well, in a way, in the short term, yes. You know, my book was set in a kind of easygoing world of air travel and a world in which the biggest obsession of a flyer might be, you know, his frequent flyer account anymore. That's probably not what's weighing on one's mind traveling across the United States. But in the long term, I think we can't underestimate the inertia of the American system. It's probably, I would guess, going to roll along in somewhat recognizable form once these shocks have been absorbed. But, you know, in the short term, the book almost feels like a pastoral, a story about, you know, happy people in some golden, faraway land. And, you know, that's kind of how it feels to me.
Of course, the funny thing is that it was a very funny critique of how uncomfortable air travel was.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was uncomfortable in all the ways that life is uncomfortable when civilization and society are humming along nicely. Suddenly when they aren't, discomfort seems the, you know, smallest issue in our lives. But it was also about a person, and the novel was criticized by people for this, who sort of enjoyed and found some security in the world of travel. And I don't think that time is going to be with us for a little while.
You live in Montana, and in some ways that keeps you comparatively safe from terrorist attacks because you live in a more isolated place.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it means you have to fly more in order to get anywhere. Have you been flying a lot since the 11th?
No, the first time I'm supposed to fly will be this Friday to Los Angeles, which has a foreboding quality about it, I have to admit. You know, apparently they found a mock-up of the Los Angeles airport, according to some report, in a terrorist's hands, and you know, I sort of feel like I'm leaving the safe harbor for the front lines a little bit.
So you're a little anxious about the flight?
Yeah, I've got to admit I am. Yeah, and I think I'll probably be scanning my fellow passengers in a way I didn't before. You know, before the biggest danger was sitting next to a loudmouth. Now it's something darker than that.
How do you think you're going to react to seeing armed National Guard at the airport?
Well, you know, I've been told that the Los Angeles airport in particular is a real armed camp. And, you know, that's something I'm used to seeing in third world countries, frankly, you know, people with automatic weapons in public places. And that really disappoints and saddens me terribly. I mean, we were able to carry on in such a sort of secular, you know, ordinary fashion here in the U.S. And suddenly, you know, we've got these guards everywhere and these reminders. And I resent that. I resent that has come to pass.
You mean you resent that it's necessary?
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, in my sort of anger against the state of things and the cosmos at the moment, that figures highly, this notion that, you know, America didn't have to show its weapons, and now we feel we have to, and I guess for good reason.
You used to live in New York, and
yeah.
Now you live in Montana. How does the threat of more terrorist attacks look to you from Montana? Do you feel pretty protected there?
Well, you know, there was a book I read in high school, On the Beach, about a group of people on some remote Australian coast after the rest of the world had a nuclear exchange, and they felt kind of impotent and free at the same time, and that's sort of how I feel in Montana. I feel almost a sense of survivor's guilt that, you know, I live in this natural fortress while friends of mine and colleagues of mine in New York were exposed to such danger and such horror. I almost feel guilty, frankly, living in Montana at the moment. You know, I want to get out there where people are having to contend with this a little bit more.
You know, in your article in Time magazine, you mentioned that the population of Livingston, Montana, where you live, is about 7,000,
yes,
which is really close to what the tally of the dead and the missing are just from the World Trade Center.
Yeah, and that's an astonishing fact. I drove around the day after the attack, and I thought, boy, had that happened here, the sidewalks would be empty, the schools, the hospitals. And it really brought home to me the scale of the devastation. I mean, everyone I know and everyone I see every day would be gone, you know, if those terms were translated to Livingston. And it's more than sobering. It's existentially terrifying.
Montana is an area of survivalists. I don't know if there's any survivalists that you know firsthand or
sure.
not. You do.
Oh, yeah.
How are they dealing with this? You know, people around the country are trying to stockpile gas masks and antibiotics. And what are the survivalists you know doing?
Well, there are formal survivalists, people who are actively and have been actively preparing for catastrophe, and there's a sort of survivalist mentality generally, you know, part of the rugged Western individualism. And the people I know, at first, disconcertingly, some of them responded with kind of braggadocio. Well, I've got my guns, and I've got my safe haven, and, you know, they don't dare come here. And I thought that was a very irresponsible and saddening response. Now I think people are starting to realize in the wake of these attacks that, you know, we're not as safe and as cut off as we might think here. You know, in so many ways the attacks touched home here. You know, the flights stopped, the FedEx man stopped coming. You know, little irritations, I suppose, but ones that reminded us that we're entwined with the rest of the country in a way that we can't turn back. And so I think even the people who think that they're going to live in splendid isolation and damn the rest of the world have come to understand that, you know, as goes New York, goes Montana.
Did you find that a lot of people you know in Montana started to see New York differently after the attack?
Definitely. New York is still perceived by a lot of people here, especially those who've never been, as this sort of decadent, soft culture that would probably fold if, you know, given a big enough blow or facing a big enough challenge. And for people here to watch these firemen and just ordinary citizens confront this with such bravery and spirit was, I think, a real education. You know, people have a new respect out here for the urban state of mind.
My guest is writer Walter Kern. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is writer Walter Kern. His satirical novel about airline travel, Up in the Air, was published over the summer. He recently moved from New York to Livingston, Montana. You were telling me that you don't have a TV in your house.
Not at the moment, no.
Why not?
Well, it has to do with technical difficulties, a satellite dish that doesn't work. But I've got to say, as a result of all that's been going on and is going on, I'm not disappointed. You know, we have a little girl at home, and just talk about this stuff has upset her. We were scheduled to go to New York the day after the attacks, and I'd been preparing her for a plane flight to New York, and when she saw planes on another person's TV crashing into the World Trade Center, she looked at me and said, "Is our plane going to catch on fire?" And it's just as well that she doesn't see too much of that, as far as I'm concerned.
So you didn't go on the 12th?
No, no, no. In fact, I was scheduled to have a book party just after the attacks, and that was canceled. And, you know, I did feel bad, though, because, you know, I have so many friends there, and there was no way to reach out to them suddenly. You couldn't even get through, obviously. And I've continued to feel that way as the weeks have gone by, you know, a little cut off and remote.
Well, getting back to your book about your satire about the inconveniences and discomforts of air travel, what happens to your book now?
Well, one thing is the cover gets changed. The cover had a bunch of little men surrealistically flying around and one of them crashing into the ground with a little fire underneath. And a couple of days after the attacks, we decided that for the paperback, we'd have to change that. The book is actually sort of a dark look at air travel. I mean, not as dark as things have become. And I think it'll probably be read for a little while, at least, as a study of a time before the war, sort of in the way we read poetry before World War I in Britain, to get in touch with that sort of innocence, because it's a innocent period suddenly in retrospect.
Well, Walter Kern, before I let you go, what have you been reading lately that you've liked?
Well, I can't say, to be honest, that I've been doing a lot of reading. I have found myself unable to concentrate, to be honest. I've been reading a lot of magazines and a lot of junk reading and a lot of internet, trying to keep up with events. And I haven't settled on what sort of book, you know, would interest me at the moment. So, to be honest, I haven't cracked one.
And what about writing? How is all this affecting your writing?
You know, I've been starting a new novel. I scrapped a novel that seemed tonally irrelevant suddenly. It's put some real hesitation in my pen, I'll tell you that. I look around and it just feels like a different world. And to be honest, it's very hard to digest and go forward at the moment.
Well, I wish you the best, and I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. Okay.
Walter Kern is the author of the novel Up in the Air. He's a contributing editor to Time magazine.